Okay, we're starting here by the two dots on the bottom of Chet Amud Bet. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Ha'omer, petach patuach matzati, ne'man lo'usra alav. So now here you have a statement, and all the Rishonim have to deal with what is exactly the claim over here. But he comes along and says that petach patuach matzati, this woman obviously had bi'ah beforehand, and I found a petach patuach. What everyone has to deal with is what happened to the Dam Bitulim over here. Why were there no Dam Bitulim in order to verify or not verify the situation? So Rashi says, Vitanat Damim Einlo. He has no Tana of Damim, Kagon Shehi, Mimishpachat Durkati, Shein Lehem Dam Bitulim. There is this family who did not have Dam Bitulim. So he has no claim against her in terms of lack of Dam Bitulim because this is a family that doesn't have Dam Bitulim. Oh, Shevdami Menu Mapa. They lost the sheet, they lost the information, the evidence. So there's no way for him to prove it or disprove it from the other evidence. So Rashi says that the issue here is that the damim are out of the picture. So he only has other one claim left, which is petach patuach matzati. That's his claim. Tosafot, on the other hand, brings the sheet of the rach, which many of the other Rishonim deal with. It's not the simplest sheet, but that's the other alternative to Rashi. Rashi basically says there would have been damim, just we're dealing with a case where either there isn't damim or we lost the damim. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that there are certain women where that's not an issue anymore. For instance, the Bilgeret umukateitz, ein lehem damim, aval ein pitchan patuach, v'yachol itan tanat petach patuach. So the way Rabbeinu Chananel explains it, there are certain women who do not have dam betulim, including a Bilgeret. We've seen that before, this concept that the Dam Bitulim of a Bugeret is diminished somehow as she ages. And the same thing is true by a Mukateis, someone who lost their Dam Bitulim from an injury, from impact of some sort. But, on the other hand, Petach Patuach, the Petach remains tight or sealed. So there can be a claim of Petach Patuach even when there is no Damim. Whereas the Ramban says actually there was Dam over here. But the Baal makes the claim that it was Dam Nida or Dam Makah. And therefore, he doesn't have evidence of Dam Bitulim because he feels he found a Petach Patuach. So yeah, that's what the Rishonim are trying to deal with is why does he only have one claim over here? Why is his claim only Petach Patuach? What happened to the Damim? Petach Patuach Matzati, Ne'man Lo'usra Alav. He is believed to make her a surah to him. As Rashi says, even though this is something we can't clarify, this is something that only he could know because there's no way for us to tell after the fact what happened, or any information. So he's making a claim, whether his claim seemingly is a claim misafek, you can never be certain about what he's saying. Even he himself, it's hard for him to know whether he can be certain about it. Therefore, in terms of the woman, she is a surah to him because he made her into a chaticha surah. As if you said something wasn't kosher, and then doesn't matter for anybody else, but as far as you are concerned, your relationship with this item is that you can't eat it anymore. So the same thing over here, that this woman, he can no longer engage with this woman because he basically said that she had an extramarital affair. Now, if she can come up with an explanation that is plausible for why this is the case, then she is nemenet, and through that, we will leave her muteret to her husband, as well as she will attain her ketubah if she can explain the circumstances. On the other hand, we aren't to'ain on her behalf. We will not interject to try to protect her or come up with a claim on her behalf because many of those claims are far-fetched, unlikely to have occurred. So if she steps up and gives an explanation, then we will believe her. But if she's silent, then we will assume that he is ne'eman, and it's as if her silence is acquiescence in this case.
On the other hand, as far as her ketubah is concerned, he can't have any impact over here because what right does he have in order to be pogeya in her ketubah? That's Rashi. On the other hand, other Rishonim believe that when Rabbi Elazar over here says that Ne'man Lo'usra Alav, that's not only to make her a Chaticha Asura, that's also to be Mafsid Ketubata. That in order for her to lose her Ketubah over here, possibly not entirely, maybe she'll only lose her Ketubah as a Ketulah, she'll get the Ketubah of an Almanah. Others suggest that she would lose the Ketubah entirely in this claim. Vamai. Amari wants to know, why is Petach Patuach a good claim? Now according to Rashi, what that means is, why is she a Asura to him? Because even if he makes the claim doesn't carry enough weight even to be oser her to him. Of course, for the other Rishonim who believe she's going to lose her ketubah, that's what the Gemara is asking. Why should she lose the ketubah? Because it's a sveik over here. What is the sveik? Sveik tachtav. The first safek we have is whether it happened while she was married to him. Meaning once they had erusin, which is a year ago, did it happen after that point in time where it was an extramarital affair? Or was it before that time? Even if it was when he was married to her, there are two possibilities here as well, which is safek bonus, safek beratzon. Question of whether she was raped or whether she was a willing participant. So I have a sveik over here. That sveik should either release him from being asur to her or release her from losing her ketubah. Again, we spoke about this in Daf Bet. How does sveik work over here? According to the Rambam, every sveik deoraita is lechumra. Why is it lechumra? That's midrabanan. Midrabanan, we say that a sveik deoraita goes lechumra. So now if I have a sveika, that means my first sveik takes the issue midoraita and drops it down to a din derabonon, which is a machmir. But then if I have another sveik, the second sveik becomes a sveik derabanan. And the principle by sveik derabanan is lekula. So therefore, sveika brings me lekula. That's the way the Rambam seemingly learns how sveika works and why there's an issue. Generally, the Balei HaTosfot favor the idea that the sveika is a building of probabilities. If you take the probability, assuming that it's 50-50, and take another probability of 50-50, if you multiply the probabilities, then your chance of something happening on the next layer is only 25%. So the rov is on one side, the miut's on the other side, and that's why a sveika is patur. We've discussed this before, that conceptually in both of those cases, both with the Rambam, and in here, with the way that we're saying it with probabilities, means that there is a leda to safek. There is a safek here. And then we have to deal with the ramifications of the safek by placing the other safek on top of it. We mentioned there that Rav Soloveitchik loved to speak about the idea that there wasn't a leda to safek. And that when you have a sveika, it's not that there's a safek and then you pask it in one way. But sveika doesn't even generate the safek. Because it's a sveika, by definition, there's not even something to consider anymore. It's out of the realm of consideration because we've either the probabilities are too low, or for whatever reason, there is no leidata safek. And again, that had nafka minot we saw between Rashi and Tosafot's explanation in the Mishnah as to why we have all women get married on a Wednesday. Why do we have people get married on a Wednesday when we're going to see in a second it's a very narrow scope of women that it matters for? Because everybody else is a sveika. So we saw that Rashi says because maybe they'll show up in court and evidence will come out. Tosafot says, no, it's because of those women. We use this, we have the other women come because it reinforces for the women that it is a problem. So we spoke about there that maybe the nafkamina or the reason that they have different opinions is whether there was a leidata safek or not, according to those two opinions. Now the Gemara says, lo tzricha, we do need it where there's a case that it's not a safek sveika, which is Be'eshet Kohen. Be'eshet Kohen, there's only one safek here, whether it was tachtav or eino tachtav. As far as the question of ones or ratzon, that's not relevant by Kohen, because even in the case of ones, he is restricted to go back to his wife. So here there's only one safek. Vi by tema, the other possibility is Be'eshet Yisrael, with the Israel, not by a Kohen, but according to Kabil, ba'avua kiddushim chuta mebat gimel shanim v'yom echad. Her father accepted kiddushin on her behalf when she was so young, that there's really no time before the marriage. There exists no time, because under the age of three, I mean, she's not really out of biyah. Even if she had biyah, there is no effect on the dam bitulim. And therefore, there's no safek of before the marriage. There's only a safek of after the marriage, after the erusin. Obviously, the erusin seemed to last a long time in this period, because if her father married her off at that age, they didn't get married right away. So you have a period of erusin, but there's only one safek left in both of these instances. And therefore, since there's only one safek, there we will be b'choshesh for that. So now, Tosafot already asks on this question, he goes, v'im tomar, akati ika svek sveka. Why isn't there still svek sveka here? Safek bonus, safek beratzon. V'im timzalo beratzon, safek kashik tana, upituyek tana onesu. Maybe it happened when she was a youngster, and when she's a youngster, if she's seduced by someone, for youngsters, the Gemara in Yevamot, we saw this together in Yevamot, Ektana, who is seduced, has a din like ones. Rashi over here says something, it says, Tuyei pitui ve'ena ones. Rashi makes a statement that it's not ones, it's not considered to be ones, which is very interesting, because the Gemara in Yevamot explicitly says otherwise. And Tosafot asked the question that way. So then Tosafot says, Yesh lomar d'shem ones chad hu. Over here, all of ones is considered to be one concept of ones, and therefore you don't have multiple probabilities over here. But then, what about the fact that she has a chazaka being muteret lebala? What happened to the chazaka over here? In general, women have a chazaka that she is muteret to the baal. Where did that go? So he says that ones has a kala. Ones has information. Think people get raped, it becomes a more of a public or known issue. It takes away from the chazaka over here. Because had it been ones here, we would have had some information. We would have heard some rumors circulating about the issue. And since we don't hear those rumors, that diminishes the chazaka. And now you have a rov versus miut in terms of the ones situation against the chazaka. And we know that rov trumps chazaka. We just learned that before. The rov is stronger than chazaka. The re suggests, on the other hand, that the rov that it is biratzon is not a rov gamur. It's a rov midrabanan, that most extramarital affairs are consensual. And midrabanan, we would assume that in a case of safek, that we would think she's a surah. But b'makom safek sfeika, the rabbanan backed out and did not enforce their view that there is a rov that is consensual. The last thing that Tosafot asks is, how come we don't say mukatetz over here? That's another possibility of safek over here. There's another layer of safek, which is maybe she lost her bitulim by the fact that she was mukatetz. Now, for the Rabbeinu Chananel, it's not an issue, because he says even if she lost her betulim, she wouldn't be a petach patuach. But according to others who say that the loss of the betulim by mukadets would be petach patuach, you have to ask, why isn't that the case here? The answer might be was that she would have been toain. I mean, that if mukadets was the situation over here, she would have spoken up and said something. Look, I'm a mukadets, and that would have been her defense. The fact that she's not saying anything over here already cast that out of the web of safek. Also, Tosafot notes that the case of mukadets is very unusual, and since it's such a minority, we're not going to add that into the probabilities or the safek over here, and that's why it doesn't generate a sfek sveka. And we dealt this with earlier. Again, the Rashba and the Ritva argue about this issue of stacking sfekot. When we do a sfek sveka, it's not just you stack every safek that you have on top of each other. They have to have some relevance to each other, and they have to be within the same decision tree. If you have something that's an independent safek, and then you try to bring them together, that doesn't automatically generate a safek sveka. A safek sveka is when one safek leads into the other safek. And so therefore you have to be careful whenever we're dealing with safek sveka to ensure that the sfekot are built on each other, and not simply, yeah, I have this safek and I have that safek, so now it's a safek sveka. Again, that was a machloka we saw between the Ritva and the Rashba earlier, as to whether you can count that as a safek sveka, if the safek or the sfekot are not necessarily related. All right, for now, the Gemara says, Maika Mashmalan, now that you taught us that when there's a single safek, you can be oser, the woman, on him. Tanina, that's a Mishnah in Kiddushin, which is, Haomer Lisha, Kiddashticha. A man says to a woman, I had Kiddushin with you. Vihi Omeret, and she says, Lo Kiddishtani. She says, Lo Yudvari Me'olam. This never happened. We never got married. He Muteret Bikrovav. She is muteret with all of his relatives because she denies the marriage. Vu asur bikrovotah. On the other hand, he is restricted in all of her relatives because he said we're married. So this is the same story as what we're talking about over here, which is where someone makes a statement that makes the other individual asur to them, then we act on their statement. So how is the case of Petah Patuach any different than this case in the Mishnah in Kiddushin? So what did Rabbi Elazar add for us over here? Ma'adutema hotam devadai kimle. Over there, he is certain. He's making a claim of certainty that he married this woman and had kiddushim with this woman. Aval hacha mikimu delo kimle. Over here, when he makes the claim of petach patuach, there is really a safek here. He is making an assumption. He is based on his feeling or his assumption about what should have been, and therefore he's saying that there was a petach patuach over here. So his claim here, even though if he comes with a claim that bari, nevertheless, is it really a bari claim? There's always a certain amount of uncertainty to his claim because it's all about his sensation and whether he thinks it was petach patuach. So kamash malon, even in that situation, we will still make her as a chaticha surah. And according to those rishonim who think she loses her ketubah, she'd also lose her tubah. I mean that it's enough of a claim that, according to Rabbi Lozer, allow that claim to go through and create all the impact that such a claim will have, even though it's a claim that is inherently questionable. Umi amar Rabbi Elazar achi. Did Rabbi Elazar really say this? V'amar Rabbi Elazar, eni isha neseret al bala, el al iske kinui vistira. That a woman can only be restricted to her husband because of questions of kinui vistira. Those are code words for sota. Ukama se shaya. And similar to the incident that happened, which we'll deal with in a second, that's David and Bathsheba. Now, kinui vistira are definitely a terminology that is used or utilized by sota. And what you're seemingly being said over here is that the only way for a woman to become a surata bala is that if he warns her not to seclude with a certain individual, and then she secludes with that individual. In that case, the wife can become a surah to her husband. If we have edim of stira, or if we have even an ed echad that she was nitme'ah, then that ed echad, because there's circumstantial evidence surrounding this, because he warned her already, then that one aid can make the woman a surah to their husband. But it also, if you really say this, then it opens up a very difficult situation, which means that technically, based if you read this literally, if the husband with his own eyes sees his wife having an extramarital affair, she would not be a surah to him, based on this statement of Rabbi Elazar. So it's obvious that's not what's meant over here, but it means that any case of safek, whenever there's a case of safek, the methodology or the mechanism by which the woman becomes a surah is kinui b'stira. And over here we're dealing with a safek, meaning that he is saying petach batuach matzati, which again, part of it is a problem of the claim itself. Secondarily, there are possibilities that she was problematic or not problematic, even if he's right about the petach patuach. So based on that, you're really dealing with the case of safek. Why should it be outside of this mechanism of kinui and stira? V'tizbra, Umar says, wait a minute. First, Rabbi Elazar's whole statement here is difficult. That case by Bathsheba and David, that didn't involve kinui v'stira. It might have been a safek eshedish, but it certainly wasn't about kinui v'stira. Vod, mi asrua, who made her asur? It says, halokasha. That's not a problem. Hachi gamar, ena isha neseret abala, el al iske kinui v'stira. Mi mase shaya, v'lo hava kinui v'stira, v'lo itasra. The only time that a woman becomes neseret to her husband is if it goes through this mechanism of kinui and stira. And I can prove that to you because by David and Bathsheba, even though there might have been a certain amount of spekot, she was not a surah to David afterwards. Had she been a surah to her husband, she would also been a surah to the Boel. Since she was a surah to the Baal, she's a surah to the Boel. That means how could David marry her after the fact? The fact that David married her after the fact shows you that whatever was taking place before wasn't enough to make her a surah to her Baal. And that's my proof that you need kinui and stira in order to make the woman asura. Mikol gom kasho. So now we're back to the original question, which is Rabbi Elazar over here is talking about a safek and saying the woman is asura. Yet over there he says the only mechanism to get to a woman being asura, the safek, is kinui v'stira. Kinui v'stira in petach patuach lo. That would be your conclusion, that it works through kinui v'stira, it doesn't work through petach patuach. Where it says, l'tim'eich kinui v'stira in edim lo. So what do you mean? You're telling me that the only mechanism for creating an isur for the woman vis-a-vis her husband is kinui stira? What happens if edim show up? If edim show up, nobody's going to question the fact that the edim come and testify that there was an extramarital affair over here. And by being an extramarital affair, then she's a surah. Elochi kamar. Eina isha neseret al bala be'ed echad ela b'shnei edim. Number one is a one aid cannot make it that a woman is restricted to her husband. One aid doesn't have that power. So dover shebe erva. Dover shebe erva requires shnei edim. We learned that out from Mamon, a hekesh gzereshava from the dinei memono. Just like over there, you need two edim. So too, by erva, you need two edim. And so no aid, no witness can make the woman a surah to her husband unless you have two edim, with the exception. Bekinoi b'stira, afilu b'eid b'chad. Bekinoi b'stira, even one eid echad nami would be sufficient. That is because by the case of sota, it says b'eid ein ba. There is no aid. Implying that if there was an aid, that would be enough to make her asura. And that goes back to what I said before. Here's a woman who, first of all, was warned not to seclude with this individual. We have eidim that she secluded with him. And now we have an eid echad that she actually had an extramarital affair. Over there, that eid echad is combined with the circumstantial evidence, and it's very clear that we're dealing with a very problematic situation, and that's why she becomes a surah to her husband.
So that's number one. Two edim, that is the standard by which a woman becomes a surat her husband. Ed echad, only in the context of kinoy v'stira.
But what about the fact, even if the woman's been named, we only kinoy and stira, it's also us, without the edech.
Right, you're right. But kinoy v'stira, over there, she's subject then to drinking the mesotah. Yeah. So she could be made mitaret. If we have an ed echad, she can't drink mesotah anymore, it's over. That's the difference. U'petach patuach, g'shnei edim dami. And this is the final piece, that's what Rabbi Elazar was saying, is that Petach Batuach, the claim of the husband, is the equivalent of two edim, because it's the husband himself that is saying it. Now again, when we say Petach Batuach is Krishna edim, that doesn't mean that she's going to be a surah or be problematic to anybody else. I mean, vis-a-vis he himself, then it's then like Shnei edim. And that's why Rabbi Elazar says over here, Petach Batuach is enough of a claim. And now, we're going to come back to this in a second, because there's going to be interlude about the story of David and Bathsheba. So let's go back to David and Bathsheba. By David and Bathsheba, why was Bathsheba not problematic?
Rashi says the reason that we should assume that she's a surah here is because they were edim to the incident. He had to send out messengers to bring her back and to take her back to her house. So there were people that knew about it. Tosafot already questions that there might have been people that knew that Bathsheba had visited David or had been b'yichud b'David, but who says that there were edim that he actually had bi'ah with Bathsheba? If that's the case, without the edim, why would you assume that he is asur? So because of that, the Re explains that the reason we would think she was asura over here is because
if you say that claim of Petach Batuach is the equivalent of shnei edim, because the guy basically is coming along and saying, I have a definitive claim because I know it's a Petach Batuach, and as a din like Shnei Edim. Then by David HaMelech, why can't you say the same thing? Amai lo asur le David, the David ayah yodeh b'vadai shenivala. David knew for sure that he had bi'ah with Bathsheba. If he knew for sure that he had bi'ah with Bathsheba, then it doesn't matter that we don't know that he had bi'ah with Bathsheba. He had bi'ah with Bathsheba, and that's it. So it should be the equivalent of Shnei Edim, because as far as he's concerned, he knows that he had bi'ah with her. We don't know. We don't have any evidence. It wasn't a public issue. It wasn't that there were edim over there. So from that perspective, you could say that he's not a sur to her and she's not a surah to Bala. But from David HaMelech's perspective on his own, he has information. Just like by Petach Batuach, the husband has unique information that nobody else has. David HaMelech had unique information that would know or make her a surah to him. So he says, Vav b'yisar sa tshuva. Even though he does tshuva, mikom makom ikva. How could he keep her if it wasn't for the fact that it was mutar for him to keep her? So what Tosafot is saying is the question of the Gemara here is David HaMelech had way too much information. And since he had that information, she was clearly problematic because he clearly knew he had an extramarital affair. She should be a surah to him like Shnei Edim, because just like Petach Batuach creates the simulation of two Edim, so too, David, knowing that he had a consensual affair with her, should automatically make her a surah because he knows that information. Yeah, we don't know that information, but he knows it. So as far as he's concerned, he should have to back away from her. The fact that he marries her afterwards shows you that that was not the case. Mar says, Atam onesavo. Over there, it was not a problem of marriage. It was not a consensual affair. Over there, it was a case of ones. It was against her will. Vi bayitema. Kiad amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, amar Rabbi Yonatan, ko hayotze lemelchemet Beit David, get kritut kotev lishto. Anybody went out to battle on behalf of David HaMelech, was in the army of David HaMelech, before he left home, he gave a bill of divorce to his wife. So again, in the first instance, if it was against her will and it was not a consensual affair, because we're in an unfair playing field, remember, this is the king, dealing with a woman who's a commoner. And so, in that sense, there's really, how much choice does she have in this matter? She's really, in a sense, not a consensual participant. So if that's the case, then if it's a non-consensual affair, then she's not a surah to her husband. So say she's not a surah to her husband, she's also not going to be a surah to the Boel after the fact. That's one way to deal with it. The second way to deal with it is that she actually wasn't married at the time. This comes together with the Gemara and Shabbat, that discusses that Kol Omer David Chata, Einu Elo Toev, the one who says that David sinned is only mistaken, because maybe, and that's the question here, there was Safek Eshadish, but there clearly was not Eshadish over here. Why? Because of this next statement, which is that Kol Yotzei Lamilchemet Beit David, anybody who goes out to battle, gives a get kritut to his wife. How do we know that? Dichtiv. Because it says when Ishai sends David HaMelech to, right around the corner here, to Emek Eilah over by Tel Ezekah, when he sends David to go check on the well-being of his brothers, this is what it says, V'tachecha tifkod l'shalom, go check that everything's well with them, V'et arubatam tikach, and you will take their arubah. Now, arubatam, probably the pashat, or the simple meaning of the word here, means that it was their provisions, or whatever they need. That's what arubatam tikach means. The Gemara says, arubatam comes, my v'et arubatam tikach, Tani Rav Yosef, Dorim ha-mi'uravim beino leveina. That is, things that are between him and her, which means the bill of divorce. David HaMelech, based on Yishai, went to collect the gitin from all of his brothers for their wives, because they were going to go into battle. Since they were going to battle, he had to go get all their divorces. Even though this is in the time of Shaul HaMelech, right, because it's not a battle in David's time, it must be that David, based on what they did, Marachot Shaul, continued that practice by the time of David HaMelech, that they gave gitin before they went into battle. Rashi claims over here, Shema Yimot B'Milchama, maybe you will die in the battle. Yeh get me'ayom. The way that the get was written is, this get is effective from today, if I should die in the battle. That's how they would give the get. Tosafot already challenges Rashi's explanation because that only has a benefit for a very, very narrow scope of women. The only women that are this is going to help out are women that would otherwise fall to Yibum. A woman who already has children, or a woman who's not subject to Yibum, then the difference between her husband dying and her being divorced actually probably negative for her. Because then she's a grusha versus an almana, and she gets no benefit by the fact that she's a grusha versus an almana. On the other hand, for a woman who would fall to a Yavam, over there is an advantage, because being a grusha would prevent her having to perform Yibum, versus an almana where she would have to perform Yibum. But that's a very narrow scope. That's women who do not have children, that has a brother who could perform Yibum with her. There are all these other factors. By the time you get down to it, you're dealing with a minority, and probably a small minority of the women to which this applies. So why would you give out gitin to everybody based on this small minority to protect against this small minority? So Tosafot raises that possibility. Tosafot says that maybe the get was given in a different way, which is not that the get was given me'ayom if I die, but rather it was given in me'ayom if I don't return from the battle. Because then now it includes other factors, which is number one, if he might have died in the battle, but they can't find him, they don't have the body, he is held captive, and we don't know, or he won't get it, we don't know what to do. It was to prevent not only the problem of Yibum, but also to prevent the problem of Agunot. And therefore, there's a broader scope of women that it would apply to, and then you could understand, or there you would have a better sense of why you would give a get in this case. Because it's not only taking care of the issue of dying in the battle in Yibum, but it's also taking care of problems of Agunot. And there it would make a lot of sense to give a get in that situation. Tosafot has a nuance based on his question here, but he says, basically, it would only be at the end of the battle, not in the interim point. If he comes home from the battle, Uriah comes home from the battle in the middle, because David calls him back from the battle in the middle and asks him to go back to his wife, and Uriah refuses to go back, and then David sends him back to be killed by the Am retreating behind him at the wall when they're up against the wall. But Uriah came back already. If that's the case, then we know the get was invalid. So what Tosafot says is the get's written at the end of the battle. It's not that he comes back in the interim. It's when the battle's over. If he comes back, then the get's not effective. Otherwise, the get goes into effect. That's just a technicality. Tosafot has a very big issue, which is that the Gemara at the end of Gitin argues about exactly this case. There's a machloket Tanaim in the Mishnayot over there for a man who hands a get to his wife and says, Me'achshav, you are divorced from me if I die. Does that mean that he really wants the get to go in effect a moment before he dies? Or does it mean that he wants the get to go in effect today? When he dies, retroactively, it goes into effect. The Mishnah asks, Mahi Botan Yamim. What's her status during that period of time? Between the time that he dies and the decision about the get, what is the status of this woman in those interim days? There it is, Machloket. Rabbi Yehuda says, she is like an Eshet Ish Legamrei. She's a full-fledged Eshet Ish. Well, if she's a full-fledged Eshet Ish there, that, because the get only takes effect, right, when he dies, and it doesn't work backwards retroactively, then we have a huge problem here. Because even if they gave a get, how does that help out David HaMelech over here? Because Uriah doesn't die till much later. And that means in the interim period, she, Bathsheba, was a Eshet Ish. And therefore he's in trouble. Tosafot over here tries to divide up and say that maybe there are different types of gitin. One get where we assume the effectiveness of the get is right before he dies because that's what he intended. Versus a get where he really means it's effective from today and retroactively it really takes effect depending on the language that you use. They said maybe you could create it to happen retroactively. That's how Tosafot leaves it off. But then the Rabbeinu Tam comes in and says, no, I'll tell you what the solution is. You know what happened when they went out to battle? They gave a get. No tnaim, no conditions. They gave a get. They gave a get to their wives. When they came back, they remarried their wives. That's it. Very simple. Divorce, remarriage. Now, they would do it quietly or privately because they didn't want other men jumping and taking their wives in the interim while they were at a battle, which is part of the problem, what David did. Here he has one of his troops out at battle, and he goes and takes her wife while he's at a battle on his behalf. So that's a huge issue with the way that David behaved over here. But you have the Rabbeinu Tam's solution, which is very simple. Not elegant, but simple, which is they just gave a get. When he came back, he remarried her. So he was divorced, and that's why there's no problem. Why they don't like the Rabbeinu Tam's shita is because the Gemara calls her a safek eshedish. In other places, that David violated safek eshedish. And over here, according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's not even a safek eshedish. There is no eshedish. What you could do or could say is that when we use the term safek eshedish, it doesn't literally mean safek eshedish. It just means that it was unbecoming or something that we would not condone, behavior that we wouldn't condone. Even though technically she wasn't an eshedish, it was still behavior that feels like a safek eshedish. She's stealing a woman from under her husband because he's at a battle. That's not the right way to act. That's not the proper way to conduct oneself. So that's why maybe we call him a safek eshedish. But those are the basic or the general three approaches to what happened over here. Either, as Rashi says, seemingly that it was just a get me'ayom for protecting against Yibum. Tosfot expands it and says, no, it was a get that if they didn't return from the battle, not if he died, but if he didn't return from the battle, because then it gives it broader scope and then it helps a lot more women because of the problems of agunot from the battles. And then we have the Rabbeinu Tam who suggests that the issue here is simply that they gave a divorce, and that was it. There were no tanaim, there were no conditions that were associated with it. So that's what Gemara says. It's either it was onus, or it was a case where there was a get involved. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Apana Namet Tanina. Our Mishnah supports this understanding of Rabbi Elazar, because it says, Betulani Seit Liyom Revi, Liyom Revi In, Liyom Chamishi Lo. Our Mishnah says that a Betula can get married on a Wednesday and not on a Thursday. My time, huh? What's the reason now? Of course, what the reason is, the Mishnah tells us what the reason is. The reason is because we wanted to get up to Beit Din the next day. But what here the Gemara is emphasizing is that there is a unique nature to this situation, which is Mishumi Kurure Dato. We don't want him to cool off. Which means that when he finds a Petach Patuach, he's going to go ahead and now jump up the next morning and go to Beit Din because he's so incensed by the fact that he found a Petach Patuach. Then we'll get the information. If we have him wait a couple of days, even though on Thursday there's a reason for him to get married on Thursday because of the bracha puruvu on Friday for Adam. So there are reasons for him to get married on Thursday. Nevertheless, we push it back to Wednesday because if he doesn't come immediately to Beit Din, then what ends up happening is that the woman grows on him. I mean that after a day, 2 days, 3 days, he starts to say, look, I really like my wife. Things are okay. And am I really sure it was a Petach Patuach? You know, maybe it wasn't, maybe there, because there are all these possibilities of what could have gone wrong and weren't there. And then he starts to talk himself into the situation where there really wasn't a Petach Patuach. So our fear is that we give him time, he'll talk himself out of the claim of Petach Patuach. Then he'll be living with his wife, Bisur. Because if she did have an extramarital affair, then he's not allowed to be married to her. So that's what is going on over here. They're basically saying, we need to make it as soon as possible after the event, because it's an emotional reaction, and we need to capture that emotional reaction because there is not 100% knowledge here. Again, with certain other pieces of evidence, there's 100% knowledge. On the other hand, with Petach Patuach, even if you could say 90% or 80%, there's still a certain amount of uncertainty here. And if you leave him there long enough, he'll talk himself out of the situation if he likes his wife. So we don't want that to happen. So that's what's happening over here. So Gemara says, Ulamai, Ilamei Tevla Ketuba. If it is to give her a ketubah, neitivla, give her the ketubah. Ela lo osra alav. It must be that the question here is whether to make her a surah to him. V'dekain tana. And he's making a claim. My love, dekain tain petach patuach. What is the claim that he's making over here that is making her a surah? Lo dekain tain tana damim. Now, the original, the Havamim of the Gemara is that he's making a claim of petach patuach. In the end, the Gemara says, no, that's not what he's making. The claim he's making is tana damim. That he didn't find Dam Bitulim. That's a definitive claim. And over there, we're going to want him to get up and bait it. I'm trying to bring a proof from our Mishnah that Rabbi Elazar is right. That's what Abai is saying. Abai is saying our Mishnah should prove that Rabbi Elazar is right, because here you have a Tanat Petach Patuach. And what is the reason that he's coming to court? If he's coming to court to divorce her, then pay her ketubah and we're done. If he's coming to court to make her a surah to him, then we have to have a claim. What claim is he making? So over here, the Gemara is saying, maybe he's making a claim of Petah Patuach, and that would support Rabbi Elazar's position. But his answer is no. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case where he makes a full-fledged claim of Tanat Damim. In that case, he would, first of all, be Asirat Tehim, and number two, she probably would lose her Ketubah in that case as well. And you would have to say that we have this worry about the Kerurei Dato, even by the case of Tanat Damim. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So there we have a statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Here the Rishonim argue as to whether this is arguing on Rabbi Elazar's position or within the position of Rabbi Elazar, which is Omer Petach Latuach Matzati Ne'eman Afsidak Ketubata. So this goes back to what we said before. Rashi says before that Rabbi Elazar believes that Petach Patuach is enough to make her Asua, but not enough to make her lose her Ketubah. So now Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says she loses her Ketubah. They're arguing. There is a machloket over here between them, and that's why we have this statement over here. According to the other Rishonim who say that the Tana that was mentioned before by Rabbi Elazar mean Petach Patuach is enough for making her Asura plus loser Ketubah, then what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel are saying is exactly what Rabbi Elazar. They're building on Rabbi Elazar's opinion and explaining that according to Rabbi Elazar, not only is Petach Patuach enough to make her Asura, it's also enough to lose her Ketubah. And that's what the statement is here. There is a third position that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel are arguing on Rabbi Elazar, and that they believe that he is Neman for the loser Ketubah, but not Neman enough to make her Asura Alav. And Tosafot discusses over here why the possible, what we call Sfeik over here, is enough to allow the elimination of the Ketubah, but not enough to make her Asura to him. And he says it because Rov Bikiim, with regards to Petah Patuach, and there's a Miut or Ein Bikiim. So if I take Rov Bikiim that are experts over here, B'cheskat Mimonan, the chazaka of the moment that is in his possession, and therefore you have a rove versus a chazaka, and a rove trumps. On the other hand, why don't we just simply argue that it is a sveik sveika, safek b'edi petach patuach, and even if he's right that it is a petach patuach, maybe safek b'ratzon, safek bonus. If that's the case, you have a sveik sveika, because she shouldn't lose out on her ketubah over here. So Tosfot answers. Because the safek of shema b'onis hayah is not considered to be a sveika gemura, according to Tosafot, in order to grant her ketubah. On the other hand, the Tosafot Yishanim says that this is not a sveik sveika because the two sveikot are not connected. The sveik of Rov Bikim versus the sveik of Ones and Ratzon have nothing to do with each other, and therefore you can't call them a sveik sveika because there's no connection between the probabilities of one and the probabilities of the other. Tosafot Yishanim explains it this way, that there's only one sveik over here, which is that Rov Bikim bePetach Patuach, Rabbi Leinian Ketubah Ruba, B'cheskat Mimonan, the Chazak of the moment that is in his possession, and therefore you have Rov versus Chazaka and Rov trumps. But the Inyan Lo Usra, to make Masur to her, you have to take the Miut of Einim Bikim, and you put together that with the Chazaka that she is Kshera to her husband, and all of a sudden now Itra Ruba, then the Miut plus the Chazaka can now go up against the Rov, and it becomes Palgo Palgo, like we saw in the Gemara in Yevamot. And that's why he is a Surah to her. So, but the Gabe Isur, it would be considered like Palgo Palgo, and that's why she isn't a Surah. And then the Gabe, the losing her Ketubah, it'll be Rov versus Chazaka, and Rov will trump the Chazaka in that instance, and therefore she loses out on her Ketubah. So whether this is an extension of Rabbi Elazar, or is this arguing on Rabbi Elazar, will depend on what you thought Rabbi Elazar said before. For Rashi, it's an argument against Rabbi Elazar's opinion. According to the other Rishonim, it is an extension of Rabbi Elazar. Not only is he powerful enough to make her Asura, it's also powerful enough to make her lose her Ketubah. And Rabbi Elazar would agree with that. Some Rabbi Yosef, my Kamashmalan, what's that teaching us? Tanina, we have this. Ochel Eitzel Chamiv B'Yuda. Someone who has a meal by his father-in-law in Yuda, Shelo B'Edim. Without Edim, Enu Yachol Iton Tanat Betulim. He can no longer make a claim of Tanat Betulim, Ibn Esh Mityachedim, because they allow the Chatan and the Kala to be isolated, to be secluded together. So because in Yehuda the practice was to allow them to be together, we discussed again, 2 days ago, we discussed why they did this, what might be the purpose of letting them be together. Rashi always says, Libo Gaspa, they should have a certain amount of familiarity, it should make it easier for them to get over the threshold of marriage, and so therefore they allow them to be alone together between Erusin and Nisuin. So because a person who was visiting by their in-laws in Yehuda was allowed to be alone with his wife, he could no longer make a claim of Bitulim. Because in all likelihood, or there is a possibility, that he is the problem over here, and not somebody on the outside. So in a sense, you really open up a sveik sveika. Because even, maybe it was him, maybe it was someone else. Even if it was someone else,
Maybe it was bones, maybe it was retzon, or maybe it was before the erusin, even after the erusin. And this would be true even again in the case of an eshet kohen, or even in the case of a young girl, you would still have a sfeik sfeika because of the fact that he might be a party to the problem. So since he's a party to the problem, that would not make her asura, and she would not be responsible for the loss of betulim if it was him. So Gemara says, "V'Yehuda hu delo matzitain." That's only in Yehuda he can't make the claim. Habi Galil matzitain. That means in the Galil he does have the ability to make the claim. Ulamai, why can he make the claim? Ilo osra lav b'Yehuda amaylo. If it's to make her asura to him, then why in Yehuda can he not make the claim? He can make the claim in Yehuda as well. Why is he blocked from the claim of saying that she had an extramarital affair? We're dealing with a barur or a bari claim.
Because he can say that I am certain that I didn't have biyah with her. And therefore, why shouldn't he be able to be oser the woman upon himself?
Elav, lav sidak tubata. It must be that what we're trying to decide over here is whether she's going to lose her tubah. Vikatayin ta'ana. And he's making a claim. What's the claim that he's making over here? So Gemara says, my love, the katayin tanat petach batuach. He's making a claim that he found a petach batuach. And what do you see from that Mishnah? That he has the power to make her lose her ketubah based on that claim. In Yehuda, he doesn't have that ability. But in the Galil, he has the ability to make such a claim. In Yehuda, the burden of proof is going to be on him. In the Galil, the burden of proof will be on her. Because in the Galil, they were never secluded together. So if there's a problem, now the burden of proof is on her to show that there shouldn't have been a problem. On the other hand, in Yehuda, where he was secluded with her, then the burden of proof is on him to show that he didn't have via and that it wasn't him in order for her to lose out on her ketubah. Now Rashi asks the question. Even though we don't have a dim over here that this happened, and it's not a claim that you can say bebarur, because there's a certain amount of underlying uncertainty to the claim. We remain steadfast in allowing this claim to go through. Why? If it wasn't true, he wouldn't have made the wedding. If this individual really didn't like this woman and he wanted to get out of this marriage, the easiest way for him to get out of this marriage is to do it before the wedding. Because we said before that Shaktu Chachamim al Benot Yisrael, Chachamim took care of Benot Yisrael, that they made the preparations for the wedding, they gave him 3 days for the preparations of the wedding, that is the investment that the husband is making in this woman. Now, if he was really had no intention of marrying this woman, and he just wants to get rid of her, he would do that before he invests all his money in the wedding. Because now he's going to lose twice. He's going to lose all the money that he invested in the wedding, plus he has to deal with the question of the ketubah over here. And if he loses the ketubah, he invested the money. The easier way to deal with this is just to divorce her beforehand and not invest the money. Since he already made the mishteh, then our chazakah, a person doesn't invest in a sudah only to divorce a woman afterwards. Because of that, that gives extra power to his claim over here. The extra power to his claim is that he put money down on this woman. He actually expended money on this woman. And therefore, if he's coming with this claim, there must be something to his claim, because there's no reason for him to do this after the fact. If he wanted to get rid of her, he should have done it before the fact, and he could have gotten out of the problem. So now that he's invested the money, then we know, or we are going to trust this claim over here. And that's what Rashi says, is why this Tana, Petah Patuah, carries weight, even though there's a certain amount of uncertainty around it, because it's just not in his vested interest to do this, or to do it this way. But in Yehuda, as Rashi says, he loses all ne'manut, because Shema Baal Bimei Erusin V'Shachach, because maybe he had biyah during the period of Erusin and he forgot about it. Oh, Heraba Mitoch Chibata, because of his love for her, he had Hera with her. And he wasn't aware of the fact that he affected the Bitulim. So because of that, he loses his claim because of the safek of the Baal being involved in this process over here. Lo, the Gemara says, the Katayin Tanat Damim. In the end, he has a definitive claim of Tanat Damim. And since he has a Tanat Damim, then we're dealing with a Barur or a Bari claim. In the case of Bari claim, then over there, she's got the burden of proof is going to be on her at that point in time.
Because as Rashi says, everything was done kedat vidin over here, and then they lost the evidence about the dam, and he's making a definitive claim. Or according to Tosafot, even though she might be believed because of amigo, that is explained in the last Tosafot on the Amud, nevertheless, he has the chazoko of ein adam toreach besudam afsida. And when you have migo versus chazoko, chazoko trumps. And therefore, he has the nemanut here, and the burden of proof shifts to the woman.
Versus petach batuach, where the burden of proof is really on him, in a sense. And therefore, we're going to have to limit what exactly are the outcomes or the ramifications of it. In the end, Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol says it has ramifications, and so does Rabbi Elazar.
But as far as proving that from the Mishnah, we can't say that that is the case. Maybe the Mishnayot are only talking about cases where you have a definitive claim. Now, what the difference between Tanat Damim is versus Petza Patuach, part of that might relate to whether this person is Bachur getting married for the first time, or someone who already has wives or has experience with women before. Over there, the claim of Petza Patuach will take on a different power when you're dealing with someone who is inexperienced, where there you can claim it's a safek, versus someone who is experienced, where they can make a definitive claim, and therefore maybe that will have nafkamino d'alocha in terms of the claim of Petach Patuach. There are other Rishonim that say that it's irrelevant. Petach Patuach, by definition, is something that has uncertainty because it's all through hargashah, it's all the sensation or feeling. And there's so many ways. We saw before this, biyah b'hataya, there are all these different ways that it could happen where there wouldn't be real knowledge. So some Rishonim claim it's a safek for everybody because of the nature of how it comes about. Other Rishonim say no, that it's a safek here because we're dealing with a bachur and a betula. But if we were dealing with someone who was not a bachur, someone with more experience, then maybe we would give that claim more credence and it'd be the equivalent of the claim of Tanat Damim. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of Ted Amud Bet.